Paul's letter to the Romans takes us from silence to speech. From every mouth stopped in guilt to one voice glorifying God through Jesus Christ our Lord. It's a vision of how the gospel transforms us from people with nothing to say to people who can't stop speaking about the greatest news in history. Join us over the next few weeks as I share my sermon series in the book of Romans, the gospel that creates a speaking people. Let's dive in. Romans chapter 1, verses 18 to 32. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of people who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him. But their thinking became futile, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools, and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like a mortal human being, and birds, and animals, and reptiles. Therefore, God gave them over in the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served created things rather than the Creator, who is forever praised. Amen. Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lusts. Even their women exchanged natural sexual relations for unnatural ones. In the same way, the men also abandoned natural relations with women and were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed shameful acts with other men and received in themselves the due penalty for their error. Furthermore, just as they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, so God gave them over to a depraved mind, so that they do what ought not to be done. They have become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. They have no understanding, no fidelity, no love, no mercy. Although they know God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continue to do these very things, but also approve of those who practice them. I just want you to imagine for a moment that you've been away on an extended holiday. I mean, September's the time to be thinking about holidays, isn't it? Just imagine 3 months overseas. Exhausted and jet-lagged, you just want to get home, you want to collapse into your own bed. But then as you arrive at your front door, that's going to strike someone more than other people in the room. When you arrive at your front door, something's wrong. Strange cars parked outside. Lights are on inside the house. Loud music is playing. As you approach the front door, the horrible truth dawns. Someone's changed the locks. You knock and a stranger opens the door. And they look annoyed. Who are you? What do you want? This is my house, you say. No, it isn't. We don't know you. Go away. You show them the deed of the house. They claim it's fake. You point to the family photos on the wall and they insist they came with the house. You mention the utilities in your name. No, the bills pay for themselves, they say. I planted the garden. No, you didn't. It just grew that way. Meanwhile, what are they doing? They're living out of the refrigerator. They're sleeping in the bed that you bought, using the furniture you've selected, enjoying every benefit of provision whilst denying the fact that you exist. And the most tragic part The longer that goes on, the more destructive they become. Your garden, it dies from neglect. Your possessions are damaged. The house deteriorates. What you've built with care, they're destroying through rebellion. So you call the police. You initiate the eviction proceedings. And when you do, they rage about how unfair you are. And it sounds outrageous, doesn't it? Who could be so blind, so ungrateful, so delusional? Well, here's what you need to know. Paul didn't tell that story, but he might as well have, because what I've just described, Paul says in Romans 1, that's exactly what we have done to God. Paul's just made the remarkable, extraordinary claim in verses 16 and 17. He's declared that he is not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes. But here's the question rattling around the Roman mind, maybe ours as well. Why? Why is Paul so passionate about this message? Why should we join his mission to speak about Jesus? Well, the answer depends, doesn't it? The answer depends on how bad our condition really is. If people out there are basically good, but with a few rough edges, then the gospel is nice. It's not necessary. But if our neighbours are decent folk who just need a better example, then mission becomes optional. But if our condition is what Paul describes in our passage this evening, if we are all squatters in God's universe, living in rebellion so deep we can't even see it, then everything changes. The gospel becomes a desperate necessity. Speaking about Jesus becomes life or death. So this evening we're asking, why do people need this gospel? And here's Paul's shocking truth. It's not that God's wrath is coming, it's that God's wrath is already here. Why do people need the gospel? Well, Paul's diagnosis is devastating, because we've traded God for lies and so deserve death. See, the squatters, they're not just thieves, are they? They are self-deluded thieves who've convinced themselves that what's obviously yours belongs to them. They're living in denial so complete that they can look you in the eye and say they don't know you. And Paul says here, that's what we've done to God. The whole of humanity are living in God's house. This creation, these bodies, this breath, whilst denying that the owner exists. We are squatters in God's universe, enjoying every benefit whilst refusing to acknowledge his authority. But we didn't just stumble into it accidentally. We made a deliberate trade. We exchanged what we know about God for lies, and those lies let us live however we want. And the owner doesn't ignore that. His wrath is being revealed right now, not just in future judgment, but now in the present consequence. God has already initiated the eviction process. Let's see that in the text, shall we? First thing this evening, verses 18 to 23. We've traded the true God for lies. Just think about those squatters again. Remember, they're not just confused about property ownership. They are actively suppressing what they know is true. So when you show up with a deed, they're claiming it's fake. When you point to the family photo, they insist they came with a house. They're not just ignorant, they are rebels. They are pushing down the truth they cannot bear to face. This is how Paul puts it, verse 18. Notice the crucial word there, suppress. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all godlessness and wickedness of people who suppress the truth by their wickedness. See, that's exactly what we've done with God. We're not seekers stumbling around in spiritual darkness, desperately hoping that someone would just show us the way. We are, all of humanity is, truth suppressors, actively pushing down what we know to be obvious. How obvious? We'll have a look at verse 20. As obvious as your nose is on your face, says Paul, verse 20. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. See, the evidence for God is everywhere. It's in every sunrise, every heartbeat, every moment that you confidently walk outside, knowing that a piano isn't going to randomly pop into existence above your head and squish you. See, the very fact that we rely on a stable natural law every day shows that we know there is a reliable creator behind everything. But we suppress that truth, don't we? We suppress that obvious truth because accepting it means we acknowledge we're not the owner of our own lives. You know what it's like trying to hold a beach ball underwater? The harder you push it down, the more it just wants to pop up somewhere else. That's what we're doing with God. The irony is devastating. We pretend we can't see what is obvious to everyone, including ourselves. Here's where it gets personal. Remember, Romans is all about getting people to use their mouths in the service of the one true God. Have a look at what we do with our speech, verse 21. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God, nor gave thanks to him. See, humanity's mouth problem starts right here. Although we've received everything from God's hand, every breath, every meal, every relationship, every promotion, every comfortable bed, we don't glorify him. We don't give thanks to him. Where our mouths were created to overflow with gratitude and confess truth about our Creator, we've used them to spread lies and live as if we're self-made. And that leads to the fatal exchange Paul describes, verse 22 and 23. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like a mortal human being, and birds, and animals, and reptiles. Do you notice the exchange there? Do you notice the deadly irony? We exchanged the immortal, the life-giving God for mortal, that is death-bound, images. We've literally chosen death over life. When you worship career success instead of God, you're trading eternity for temporary. When family approval becomes more important than God's approval, you're exchanging the immortal for the mortal. When comfort and security replace God as your source of confidence, you become like the lifeless idols you serve instead of the living God. Paul's actually quoting Psalm 106 there. It's a little taste of where we're going. Psalm 106, a passage about Israel, about God's own people who had seen the very miracles. They'd experienced salvation firsthand. And what does the psalmist say? Well, they exchanged their glorious God for an image of a bull which eats grass. They forgot the God who saved them, who'd done great things in Egypt. And it goes on. So this passage here isn't just about those pagans over there. This includes religious people as well. This includes God's own people. This includes us. I mean, how easy is it for us to forget the God who saves and just get on with everyday life? To find our identity in everything other than him? See, humanity, we are just like those squatters. We're living in God's creation, breathing God's air, using bodies that God designed, enjoying relationships that God provides, whilst denying the owner exists. And we use his gifts without ever giving a word of thanks to the giver. We've all made this trade. We've all suppressed the obvious. We've all taken the immortal God and exchanged him for a mortal substitute. And like those confused squatters in my illustration, we know exactly what we're doing. We're just too proud to admit that we're not the rightful owners of our lives. It's brutal, isn't it? We've traded God for lies, but if you think that's devastating, well, brace yourself for what comes next. We've traded the god of life for a lie, and so we get death. Verses 26 to 32, it is the natural outcome of our choice. Reject life, or you get death. And the shocking truth, we've already said it, is that God's wrath is already being revealed. As I said, the owner's already begun the eviction process. There's a repeated phrase that thunders through these verses. It is God gave them over. Three times it tolls like a bell. Verse 24, verse 26, and verse 28. This isn't God losing his temper. It's not that God gets frustrated. This is divine judgment that's in action right now. The wrath of God is being revealed, present tense. God's anger isn't just coming, it's already here. So what is God's judgment? What does Romans say? God's judgment is he lets us do what we want to do. Say, God gives us over. I mean, the punishment fits the crime perfectly. Remember those squatters? They want to live without acknowledgement of the owner. Well, the owner says, fine, have it your own way. So he cuts off the utilities, stops the maintenance. He lets them experience what life is really like when you reject the one who provides it all. Life without God is exactly what we demanded. And so it's exactly what God gives us. And if God truly is the source of all life, then rejecting him means we're running full pelt into death. It affects our bodies. Have a look at verses 24 and 25. Bodies that were created for God's glory now become sites of shame and degradation. Because when you reject the Creator, well, don't be surprised when things stop making sense. It affects our desires, verses 26 and 27. And we throw the Creator out the window and creation's design goes with it as well. Everything we see in the first couple of chapters in Genesis gets turned on its head. Where God made man and woman for each other, what do we find here? Women exchanging sexual relations for unnatural ones. Men abandoning natural relations with women. Inflamed with lust for one another. It's Genesis 1 and 2 on its head, isn't it? And the cheek is, we now celebrate that, don't we? We speak about it with, pun intended, pride. So when you reject the designer, don't be surprised when design breaks down. But more than that, it affects our thinking as well. Our minds were made to run on God's track, but now that track is crooked and cracked. This is one of the kids' books in my house. Sin affects our thinking, our minds. We cannot think what God is like in ourselves. We have to hear what God himself says. Our own thinking, our own desires, they're warped. We reason our way into whatever we want to reason our way to. We say that good is evil and evil is good. The list continues, verse 29. They become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed and depravity. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. They have no understanding, no fidelity, no love, no mercy. Do you get the point? The list is dire, isn't it? And right in the centre of that list is speech. Our mouths were made to bring life. Instead, they spread destruction. Paul will finish this section off saying, their throats are open graves, their tongues practice deceit, the poison of vipers is on their lips. That's why the gospel is so urgent. People's mouths are instruments of death, and it is only the gospel that restores truth and life once more. And most crucial of all, we know what we're doing. Remember, God's existence is as plain as the nose on our face. And so verse 32 is devastating, isn't it? Although they know God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continue to do these very things, but also approve of those who practice them. We all know that God's righteous decree means we deserve death. But we carry on anyway. More than that, we approve of that behaviour. We cheer it on, we lobby for it, we vote for it, we celebrate it on our TV screens. You only have to watch the news to see that in action, don't you? Do you see what Paul is saying here? He is saying that all humanity deserves death. The diagnosis is complete, the verdict is in. If we've understood this correctly, God's judgment isn't vindictive anger, but the godless world that we've demanded. He's given us exactly what we've asked for. Life without him, and so death. It's like those house squatters complaining the water's been disconnected and the eviction notice has come through the letterbox. This is so unfair, they cry, as they live in someone else's house. That is our state as humanity. And we're experiencing right now the wrath through the consequences of getting exactly what we choose. We deserve death. So there it is. We traded God for lies, and so we deserve death. We're spiritual squatters experiencing the inevitable breakdown that comes from rejecting our rightful owner. But here's what makes this the most important diagnosis you will ever hear in your life. If there is a solution to this problem, if something could reverse this fatal exchange, then nothing else matters any more than that, does it? That's exactly why Paul said verse 16 before this. For I'm not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes. The gospel isn't nice to have. It is the only thing that brings spiritual squatters home. That is exactly why we need to get on board with Paul's mission to the Gentiles. That is why Paul is so passionate about getting this gospel to Spain and beyond. Because those distant people, they're not noble savages. They too are squatters like us, experiencing God's wrath. Are those nice neighbours that we know? They're not just good people who need better examples. They are rebels under judgment, whose mouths have become open graves. Paul shows us that they're active rebels under God's wrath, desperately needing the gospel he's bringing. Paul's missionary priority is not optional charity. It is emergency rescue for people already drowning. The gospel isn't nice to have. It is desperate necessity. Mission isn't charity. It is emergency rescue. Evangelism isn't optional. It is life or death urgent. And so it lands for us like this. If this here is humanity's condition, what should be our highest priority? See, when we speak about Jesus, we are offering life to those trapped in death. Only the gospel reverses humanity's fateful exchange to restore us back to the rightful owner. Let me take you back to that house illustration once more. Just imagine those squatters were trashing your property, denying your existence, but then your son came to the front door. And imagine that instead of demanding his own rights, he offered to pay their debt. Instead of enforcing the eviction upon them, he offers to adopt them into the family. Instead of punishment, he offers them forgiveness and a legal place at the dinner table. That's the gospel, isn't it? That's why Paul's not ashamed of it. That is why it is the power of God for salvation. That is why it trumps every other priority. That is why we join Paul's mission. That is why we speak about Jesus. Do you see right here? We're not speaking about Jesus. We're not being pushy or judgmental. We are offering the only solution to humanity's deepest problem. We're joining Paul's urgent mission because people are drowning right now, and we're the only ones with the only life ring. Thanks for listening. If the gospel has opened your mouth, go pass that message on. Go speak of Jesus with confidence and joy. To the only wise God be glory forever through Jesus Christ our Lord.